It's time to share your story. Welcome to Revealing Conversations with Patron Nicole. Heart-led discussions that reveal, release, and unveil. You will leave this hour lighter, brighter, and inspired. And now, here's Patron Nicole.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to my show. This is Patron Nicole, your host. I have the great pleasure to interview a remarkable person today who is also a co-author in the book Life Sparks. So we did this book together that was authored also by Tammy Blodgett and Denise Baines, and there are 21 authors. And Susan created an incredible following. Her chapter in the book is called Crossing Bridges, Transforming Emotions Through the Arts. We will be talking about a subject today that is very dear to my heart, since art was definitely what saved me as a child. I can still today smell the scent of oil paints and turpentine in my grandfather's studio, and how much I loved watching him paint and how much he influenced my interest in art and science. I used to go down to his studio and watch him for hours and hours, and he would put the brushes in my hand, and that is how I got into the art. And then when I moved to London at age 17, I literally kept my sanity living in galleries, and I was taking lots of art classes. So this is a very, very dear subject to me, and I am it gives me such a great pleasure to introduce Susan Greif today to the show. Susan is the owner and facilitator of Art Men's Heart LLC, and is a creative, transformational expert and healing arts professional who uses the expressive, creative, and healing arts to help women and children find emotional freedom from anxiety, depression, trauma, abuse, grief, loss, illness, pain, and eating disorders, social behavior, and learning disabilities, so that the client can let go of her anxieties that keep her feeling paralyzed, panicked, and in pain. Susan works privately with individuals or in groups and gives workshops for organizations and corporations to increase socialization and communication. She is a motivational speaker, a published photographer, illustrator, and now author, and is in the process of writing her own book. So, Susan, can I welcome you onto the show? Are you there?
Thank you, Petra.
Hello.
Hello. What a welcoming.
Can you hear me?
Oh, I can. Can you hear me? Hello.
I can hear you. Hi, I can hear
Hello.
You.
Yes?
Yes. You're loud and clear.
Hi. Okay, good. Sorry about that. Yes, hi. Thank you for welcoming me to your show. What an introduction. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So my first question to you is, tell me a little bit about your journey that led you to your transformation of finding your purpose through the arts.
Of course, our journey begins as children. We don't always realize it until we get to that point, and we realize all our knowledge and all of our life experiences bundles into what we do in our current lifestyle, and it's a matter of finding those little lessons we've learned over the years and doing something with that. So in my book, I talk about my journey. I talk about how I was raised by parents who were Holocaust survivors, and they had their traumas and their issues, and the expressive language was a little bit more difficult for them because of the language barrier. And they're very traditional, very old-fashioned. So I did what, a good girl would do, and I just listened to them. You know, as children survivors, we try not to cause our parents any more pain that they had suffered. But you listen to them, you do what you're told to do. And they were also pretty much controlling. And I understand that now, I think, because they've lost so much family during the war. So we were like children who are pretty much robotic. Decisions are made for us. Everything was told us what to do. And I actually was a biology major, and I minored in psychology in college. My plan was to be a dentist. It's one of those, at that time, it was a very male-oriented field, and I kind of felt that maybe it was like a passive-aggressive way of me trying to get out of the traditional roles of being, you know, a housewife, and I wanted to become, a modern woman. So I went to dental school, and I quit the day after orientation, and because I just got engaged, and I felt I needed to make a choice. And of course, my parents were not encouraging me. So they, going to dental school, they were rather me be housewife and stay home and raise children. And, there's a reason for everything in life, because the next 7 years, I lost both of my parents and I had 4 children after I got married. So I don't resent the fact that I didn't go to dental school, because I don't think I would have been able to manage both. All of that was going on in my life at the time. It was a very trying time in my life. So I raised my children and dealing with their issues, being a young parent and loss of parents. I kind of felt there was something more I needed to do. And the other thing is my kids have like a little bit of earlier on like language disabilities. So I kind of work with them, drawing with them for them to learn a different way and to learn, how through the arts, how to understand. And they ended up using that and creating, little comic books of their own notes. The other thing is I felt like I needed to do something more. I felt I was never complete. I was like on a journey, I think of several years, figuring out what I want to do with my life, especially when I turned to my daughter and I said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And she says, well, I want to be a mommy and do nothing like you. And, that brought me back to that traditional, mother role that made me still want to go to dental school and resist traditional roles. And that really bothered me, and it turned out that my local temple actually had a mission the following week to go to Macedonia during the Balkan War and help refugees, and I just took my camera in hand, which I was studying photography at the time. I took my camera in hand, and I just went with them, and I wanted to do something important, and they were actually using a lot of the expressive arts to heal those people in the refugee camp, but I didn't notice that. I was busy taking photographs and trying to get the emotions that came through the lens that expressed what these people were feeling. And when I brought all my photographs back, they ended up being displayed in museum, in shows, in a gallery in the city, in Manhattan. And it was like, great. And I was like on this high, like, wow, I'm being recognized. And, it's funny because, on my, as I find my photographs is, Susan Horn Grice, leaving my maiden name as this is who authentically I am. It's nothing to do with my husband, nothing to do with my children. This is who I am. So that was great. And I turned to my husband and I said, this is what I want to do. I'm going to be a photojournalist. And he looked at me like, you got 4 kids under the age of 8. Where are you going? And, he is a realist. I'm more of an idealist. So, I said, you're right. I put my camera down. But in the meantime,
That's a good combo. That's a good combo.
Yeah, there's always a reality check, and there's always a whimsical thing, like we have to balance each other off. And, and our kids, they win from that. They learn from both of them, like balance. So it was great. So I kept my mind busy. I took art classes, and I took dance classes for years, and I took photography. I took all kinds of writing classes. I drama classes, and then I started going into healing arts, a lot of yoga and meditation and breathing. I started studying the science of medical intuition. I started studying energy healing. I started, and then one day I'm like, I guess when I was turning into my 40s, I kind of like became depressed because my children were now leaving, didn't need me as often as they used to when they were little. So I kind of felt a void. And I knew I needed to do something. So I was going through, bouts of depression. I still a lot of writing, journaling to help really understand what it is I needed. And it was interesting because I journaled my dreams, and my dream was very, very telling. There's always patterns in dreams. I think people need to learn that there are patterns in their dreams. But I had this recurring dream at the time of me going to the airport, and either I left my, you know, suitcases at home, or I left my passport home. I just never made it on the plane. Then after I realized there was a pattern, I came to realize that my, you know, suitcases was all the baggage that I had to let go of in order to move forward, and the passport was my identity. And when I realized that I need to find an identity for me, not just as mommy and as wife, I needed to figure out what I wanted to do. And my husband, one day he said to me, you know what, I know we'll make you happy. You know, you should work. We're part of this. We help this organization, children with, dysfunctional homes. So he said, if you work with them and their children and just did art with them, you'd be, like, so happy. And that was a light bulb. I said, you're right. I did research. My girlfriend said, you should go to the new school. They have a creative arts therapy, you know, certification program. And I looked into that, and I also looked into, a graduate school to get license in art therapy. And then I realized how many more years I would need. So I said, okay. I said, I'm just doing the certification. It's a 2.5-year program. And I did it. And I think I sat there in class. Like, everything that I learned, like, just funneled in. Like, oh, my God, I get this. This makes me understand everything. So I studied, you know, the art, and I studied dance and movement on this program. Mm-hmm. And then I developed my own program, my own multi-disciplinary approach, where I use, you know, all of the arts and all the healing arts and expressive and the creative arts to help my clients find what it is that they're missing in their life, so that they can transform and deal with the anxieties that prevent them from moving forward.
How do you use the arts today to help other people? Like what is your process? I know you work in groups and you work individually, and I'm just really curious. I mean, I just think the art is so powerful in helping people come out of.
Right. Well,
I wish it would be used more with vets, you know, with veterans.
Yeah.
I wish that was.
Yeah.
There were more programs.
They're a great group. I think there are. I know it is used by the Israeli Defense Force, Israel. I think they are trying to create more of these things for veterans, these art programs and movement programs and so forth for veterans. So. We just keep our fingers crossed and just put it out there. It's out there. It just has to. It's not widespread, but it's out there. But art makes our thoughts and emotions more perceptible. You know, like our ideas and thoughts are just abstract until you put it down on paper, then it becomes more concrete. And when it's more perceptible, more tangible, more concrete, you actually see the subconscious coming up. And then once you know what the problem is, you can actually move forward and make the change in your life. So, like, for instance, I have this woman, when I first started working with her, she felt like, you know, she felt so invisible to her friends and so forth. You know, her husband died 20 years ago, her parents died 10 years ago. She lost her friendship. She lost, you know, and she has a poor relationship with her children. And so I asked her to draw this assessment called Family Kinetic Drawing, and so I asked her to draw a picture of her and her family when she was 5 years old, because that's usually when our first memories come through to us. And so she drew a picture of her parents, and then she sat there and, like, she's, you know, I can't draw myself. I don't see myself. I don't see myself. So here she was, even invisible to herself. So that became something that she needed to shift and make a change and not become invisible, but make herself important and relevant for her first. But it's not just, it's not only what comes up for my clients. It's also I've learned to diagnose and analyze art. So, you know, what colors they chose, what medium they choose, what the placement of the symbols, how large, how small, how hard, you know, they're all these little symbols are all Carl Jung's talked about universal symbols and how, you know, if you think about those emojis, everybody knows it's a universal symbol. Everybody, you don't have to have the same language to understand the symbols or emojis. You know what it means. So same thing with the
art.
Yeah,
so tell me a little bit more about this. Tell me a little bit more about this lady that you worked with, the woman that you worked with that couldn't see herself in the... So well, how did you remedy that? Like, what did you do next when once you realized that, oh my gosh, you know, she can't really see, she cannot see herself as a 5-year old with her parents. So what would be the process? I'm sure that our listeners would be very excited to hear that.
Well, I think one of the processes first is empowerment. You know, first step, of course, is willingness to make the change. Okay, the awareness comes now with the drawing, so you see the issues, and now it's about making it a change. So I think one of the first things I like to do is have my clients do a need to do list, because I want them to empower themselves. So they have a want to do list and a need to do list, and find balance. So for a person, most women are more giving and caring and nurturing, and they tend to neglect themselves, and they don't ask for help for themselves. So, you know, we talk about, like, oh, behind every great man there's a woman. The woman's always in the background. The woman never seems to shine. So it is important for her to feel like she can shine, that she can accomplish, she can do. Because once she's able to do it, and this is where we talk about crossing bridges, by the way, you know, if you want to do a need-to-do list, is not just going, you know, writing down what it is you want to do. It's also understanding the little small steps that take you to the other side of that, let's just say, bridge, which I talk about, like, in crossing bridges, and to also become aware of the negative talk that prevents you from getting over to on the other side of your bridge. The only way you can, you know, it's like, you know, we all tell ourselves some things that, and we find ourselves in a constant loop. You know, if you want the job, you're going to go, you know, you say, okay, I want this job. But no, they're not going to hire me because I'm not good enough. Like, oh, this guy is good looking. Want to ask him out? No, he probably thinks I'm fat and ugly. So we have this negative talk.
Yeah, like, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. I can't do it.
Yeah.
I can't do it. There's always that negative response from the mind, and we have to create new neural nets by changing the language, the inner language.
Correct. So this is also, we talk about all the different types of, you know, the 10 different types of, you know, negative self-talk. So we talk about what, you know, and then to create that self-talk and then turn into a positive. So, you know, I'm not good enough. You have to start, you know, saying, you know, like, I am good enough and give a reason why. So, like in my book, I talk about crossing your bridge and the trolls that are underneath the bridge that prevent us from going forward. You know, there's an old story called Billy Goat Gruff. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
I am
actually familiar with it, and I love reading that story
so the three billy goats are trying to cross the bridge to get to the other side where the grass is greener, and they're as the first one starts to cross, there's a troll underneath the bridge, and there is he jumps up and he wants to eat the billy goat, and the billy goat is like, it's like he's not letting him go. He says, oh, you know, don't eat me. My big brother's behind me. He's bigger than me. You'll get more out of him. So then he crosses the bridge. The second billy goat comes up, and he says, oh, don't eat me. You know, take my bigger brother. He's even bigger than me. And then the biggest billy goat comes to the bridge, and the troll comes up, and he butts him with his horns and throws the troll off the bridge. And then he crosses the bridge too. So, you know, we allow these trolls to come up into our life, and every time we want to do something, you know, we allow them to come up. But we need to be these billy goats to give them an excuse of, like, why, you know, you're not going to intimidate us and we're going to go forward. So so the transformation starts with that. So when I give them a want to do and a need to do list, the need to do is about being responsible and doing what you have to do, but you also need to balance it with something you want to. And I have them listed from like cleaning out a drawer to climbing, you know, Mount Kilimanjaro. And it doesn't matter how crazy it is. And so this client, her dream, she had actually on her refrigerator, a magazine, a newspaper clipping of this place she always wanted to go. In 10 years she's been sitting on her refrigerator. So that was on her bucket list, and she actually accomplished it this last July. She's so empowered, I have to tell you. The first day she came to me, she was crying because she was afraid to go back home because her daughter was going to, like, be upset with her. And I have to tell you, this woman doesn't take it. She doesn't let her, you know, doesn't let her daughter, you know, intimidate her anymore. And she took power and ownership. Mm-hmm. And what happens is when we shift, people around us shift too.
Mm-hmm.
So because we learn how to have relationships with other people and with ourselves. Most important, so learn how to have a relationship with yourself, learn how to love yourself, how to respect yourself. Because if you don't love mm-hmm. yourself and you don't respect yourself, you're going to attract people who don't love and respect you too. And so that's mm-hmm. the other thing. We want them to change how they feel about themselves, empower themselves, and everything else shifts with them.
It goes back to the saying, it always takes two to tango in certain
yes.
situations. And I do explain this to my own students when I teach emotional processing classes, and I talk about how we create our own reality. And, you know, when you shift what you believe as truth, if it's not working for you and you're shifting it, then the world you meet suddenly outside is no longer the world that you had before, because you have
exactly.
shifted and your aura has changed. And whatever you're projecting out to the universe plays back through the universe. And those are then the events you meet out there in the
Absolutely.
Greater universe.
So, Absolutely.
So I just love what you do. I love what you do.
Thank you. Yeah, so it's interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I, you know, like we've been doing drawings all along, like where she is in her process. And, you know, I think for the first time she just had this, like, amazing drawing. She was in it and she was center and she was happy. So, you know, I'm, you know, these wonderful, you know, stories just makes me smile, because if I can help one person, that in itself is amazing. So I'm very blessed.
Mm-hmm. Well, would you, you know, I'm from Munich, Germany, and I'm just now, in the next 2 days, my book will be on Amazon, and it's called Petra's Ashes, and I wrote an entire chapter on Nazi Germany because it was so difficult for me as a German person, young girl, when I arrived in London at age 17, and I realized how much actually happened that I didn't hear about while I was living in Germany growing up. And I mean, it's to me so fascinating that you had parents that were survivors of the Holocaust and what they must have gone through, and how, you know, how much of that did you actually hear about? I mean, were they able to do any processing whatsoever? I mean, can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So actually, my mother was actually born in the Warsaw Ghetto, and my father was about 10 years old when the war came out, and they did not go to the camp. They did run away and hide in Russia. So that's why they survived, but they were in the forest, trying to live their life. And I mean, there's two long stories, but so they were also one of the younger of the survivors. So, so when they had, you know, for my mother especially, she probably didn't remember what it was when she was a little girl, because she was just born during the war, and I guess the war's over when she was five. So her stories are hearsay, and my parents had no problem sharing their stories with us. But I think as a child, I didn't care to hear them.
mm-hmm.
But I do. And now they're no longer with me, and now I'm quite saddened that I hadn't had it, you know, recorded. I know Steven Spielberg did an amazing, amazing documentary with all the Holocaust survivors, and I actually work with a lot of children Holocaust survivors because of their trauma. So when we talk about the vets, yes, you know, there's a trauma, and the children of Holocaust survivors suffer as well. They suffer from intergenerational post-traumatic stress disorder, and you know, it's proven that, you know, there's, you know, epigenetics has proven that, you know, your DNA can change a bit with your environment, and that can go into your gene pool, your genetics. And so a lot of these children of Holocaust survivors are hypersensitive to stress and anxiety, because this is what their parents had to live with during the war. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people in Holocaust survivors who were born soon after the war had it most difficult because their parents hadn't processed the information. By the time I was born, it was more processed, it was more talked about. But in the earlier years, it wasn't talked about. I think a lot of Holocaust survivors married right into when they're in the DP camp just to start family again, just to find love and family, just to move forward in their life. They didn't take it as victims. You know, they took it like, okay, we're going to rebuild, we're going to restart, we're not going to let anybody, we're not going to let this, continue. So a lot of the children of Holocaust survivors who are older do suffer a lot more trauma, a lot more anxiety. The stories they tell me, I think, wow, I've never heard of this story. I cannot believe it. And it's true. So for me to work with these people who I can totally relate to and understand and help them, I actually have an online teleconference I hold, every 2 weeks with a group of children survivors. So, you're close to my heart, and we can all relate to each other. You know, what we thought was not normal growing up is normal to each other.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, there is a film out on Netflix called Hitler's Children, and many of these kids, including myself, I mean, suddenly I was born way after the war, but my mom and my father, they were also 5 years old, little kids, but there were children that lived next door to Dachau or Auschwitz and didn't know this was going on. I mean, things were hidden to the Germans.
Yes,
a lot of
course.
Germans,
I mean, there's a lot
know
of propaganda.
What was happening? Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, and they were the exactly, and they were the masters of the media. I mean, it was really the Nazis that started this entire, media lie of just making people believe something. And people believed it. They absolutely believed it.
Yes, because, everything was staged. They show videos and movies of the camps and how much fun the children are having, at the camp. Like, oh, the kids are playing in their pretty little clothing. I was in New York City at the MoMA in Manhattan about 2 years ago, and there was one section in the museum. They talk about propaganda artists, and they have Stalin was a propaganda, Lenin, Mao Zedong, Hitler. They have all these photographs that were superimposed to make them look like they were brilliant and life was beautiful.
Did you see the movie The Boy with the Striped Pajamas?
Yes, that's what I was thinking about, because it was a great movie. I love that movie. That little girl, right? She would bring something. She would hide him. I remember. I forget what it was. It was years ago.
I think it was two little boys. One was inside the concentration camp, and the other one was outside.
It was a girl.
Father. His father was a general.
Yeah.
And
yes.
He went to the gate and to the fence and would hand the little boy inside the camp food.
Right. I thought it was
he would
girl,
ask him
right,
questions.
Yeah.
He would
ask him
questions
great.
What he was doing in there. So it's very, very interesting book. And also the movie was quite good. It's available on Netflix, actually. So if anyone's interested, if the listener is interested in finding that, just go to Netflix and search for The Boy with the Striped Pajamas. But have a box of tissues handy, because it will make you cry, this movie. So it's quite sad. Susan, tell me a little bit about your chapter in the Life Sparks book. And it's such an honor to be a part of that together with you. So I'm just very excited that you're part of this. So
Thank you. It is an honor. And I've gotten to speak to amazing people. And I read I didn't get a chance to read the whole book, because what I love about the book is each chapter is just a few pages. I can put it down, read it, put it down. And I love to learn about everybody and how amazing every person in this book is and how inspiring each individual is, and I hope other people will pick it up and and read about it and share, and also, you know, maybe review, make a review in, you know, on Amazon. It's a great book. Basically, what my story is about is what I share is my journey, my transformation, about, you know, about crossing bridges and all the little, you know, feats that we have in life that we think is an obstacle, but we have to figure out how to get to the other side. You know, one of the things we talk about when it comes to obstacles, you know, we can look at it as a dead end or we can look at it as an opportunity to grow. With growth comes, you know, you have to, you know, got to be creative. How do you deal with the obstacles? You know, how do you go around it? How do you figure it out? But interesting, when obstacles are placed in our presence, it's there to A, to make us reflect and think about what's going on in our life, and also help us become more creative in how to deal with it. And when we become more creative, it helps actually with neural, you know, connections in our brain. It's a, you know, everything, mm-hmm. you know, every time you learn something new, every time you become creative, it's much, it's great for our brain. And it also, you know, lowers or delays risk of Alzheimer's. So don't look at obstacles as something
isn't
negative.
Isn't that the frontal lobe that, that the creative center is in, the part, the front of the brain? The frontal lobe?
Yes. Yeah,
isn't that creative center in the frontal lobe? I'm just kind of verifying that with you right now.
Well, the frontal lobe is more about decision making, what's right, what's wrong. You know, is this right? Mm-hmm. It's actually the very last part of the brain that's developed. So when you're about 25 years old or so, that's when it's most developed. So when we wonder why our children, you know, teenage kids can't decide what the right and the wrong thing to do, is that because that decision making part of the brain is not fully developed. So we deal with the, you know, we deal with like the amygdala, which is more of the emotional, creative side of the brain and sense side. So, you know, amygdala kind of triggers us, like, you know, it has all our memory senses in there. So, you know, it's like, so we know that, you know, if you have touched fire once, you know, never to touch fire again. So those are our trigger memories. So, like, if we may have suffered some kind of trauma in our very young age, even prior to being five, that we have no any recollection about, but our memory sense has all these memories in it. It's kind of like a little file cabinet. You got to figure out and go through. It's like, oh, this is why I have my anxiety about fear of balloons or fear of, you know, high stories or whatever it is. So, So and that's all we know. The creative side is, don't forget, we also have the left brain, right brain, the left brain is more organized, more analytical, more logical, more concrete, and the right side is more abstract, more creative, more emotional. You know, it's like, you know, they say, like, imagine. Somebody says, I don't know if I love this comparison, but somebody says, imagine, like, the left side of your brain are like little meatballs while the right side is spaghetti, or everything interconnects and intertwines. You know, the left side is like little compartments, you know, you can only do one thing at a time. Everything's structured, organized, and the right side. So more emotion, more creative people are right brains. And it's interesting because a lot of the children who are dyslexic, it affects the left side of the brain because that's what the language is. And when that language is disrupted, children have to learn through the creative way of thinking so they can engage both hemispheres.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, at some point I decided to, my son is 25 now, so he's back now. He's you know, always said, when they're 16, you know, somebody abducts them and then they brought back when they're 25 and suddenly they can reason. So,
yeah, exactly. So that's
my son John is completely back now with his reasoning, so which is really exciting for me. And we have a great relationship, and we joke around this subject of how when you're younger and you're not completely in balance quite yet. And I think for boys, it takes a little longer than for girls for some reason. I think that girls mature a little earlier Isn't that your experience as well?
Yes. I think just boys are just more mechanical. You know, they're running and going and doing, you know. And, you know, and most girls, I'm saying in most, I don't want anybody to think I'm discriminating boys and girls, but it's a true fact of life that there are, you know, most girls would rather sit down and play with their dolls and boys would rather jump and climb on the monkey bars. Doesn't mean that it doesn't happen on either side, but that's, I think, in general, there is a difference in the way children play. But it could also, you know, not only have to do with, like, you know, nurturing at home, teaching your child, okay, this is what you play with dolls, and the boys just, you know, but I think this day and age, too, I think parents are more willing to let their girls climb the monkey bars and the boys play with dolls, too, so, but, yeah. But like I said also earlier
I decided to put my son in a Waldorf school when he was 9 years old. We had moved, and there was a Waldorf school. Rudolf Steiner created Waldorf schools. They are work with different systems. It actually came out, I don't know if you're aware of this, and you probably know all this, that Rudolf Steiner was one of the first people that fled Nazi Germany and moved to London. And he had what is called the Waldorf cigarette factory. And the parents of the factory came to him to create a school that was non-denominational. And those were all, you know, victims of the war. And so he created this incredible system, and that is why it's called Waldorf. And so they use round shapes. They use movement to teach mathematics. They use a lot of music. There's a lot of touch and feel, feeling through color and learning through music like you're doing, learning through art, learning through sculpture. And so forth. So learning dimensional things through sculpture rather than by just teaching through words, because a lot of people just don't learn words. They have to actually create the movement with their hands and their legs to really integrate that into the whole person. So integrating body, mind, spirit is the goal of that school. And it was very effective for my son to be part of that. And I'm really glad we took that route. So I don't know, probably in New York where you are, there are lots of schools like this, I'd imagine.
Yes, there are more schools popping up. I actually did my internship at the Hudson Guild, and they were doing integrating, you know, where they learn one thing, and it goes through, like, through the art class, the dance class, through the science class, the math class, whatever it is, let's say, for water, you know. So they can learn about, you know, science and water. They're learning, you know, in story about, let's say, Christopher Columbus. And then in art, you have to know what is in the water, you know, fish is in the sea. So they integrate it in that sense. But, yes, I'm certified in the Orton-Gillingham approach to learning for children with disabilities, as well as taking a multisensory approach to learning. So, yeah, I totally integrate all kinds of movements, because they say the best way to learn is not just from reading, but to use more senses you use, the greater you can remember it. So, you know, reading is great. Reading and writing and saying it is great. Watching a movie adds to it. But once you start embodying the character, once you start, you know, embracing it and becoming, and then you're able to teach, that is the highest form of learning and remembering. So, I actually had one English. I was not an English and social studies child. I was more of a math and science. But what was interesting, I had one English teacher she came in, she was teaching, it was 11th grade, and to me, she was very strange. She was this, like, old woman with jet black hair, and she has these long, long fake eyelashes and blue eyeshadow, and she walked in like a drama scene. We used to laugh at her at the time because we were kids, and it wasn't very nice, but we did. But she taught us how to read stories in such an interesting new way. She actually had groups of kids get together, and each group would act out a chapter. So not only are you reading the book, not only are you watching your friends perform, but you're also embodying the characters of the book. So now you're truly, fully engaged in the story. And that was, to me, like, now, you know, that's the only way I was able to learn, because I guess I had the same issues not knowing it as a kid. And
I so relate to that. wasn't much of a reader until I went to a private high school in Munich, and my German teacher had us enact the stories of Faust, Goethe's Faust, you know, and Goethe was the one, Wolfgang Goethe was the one talking about, if you learn a second language, you know, you're opening the speech center in your brain, which will then create, you know, make you into a more creative person anyway. But so adding other languages is very important. And the saddest thing for me right now is that out of the school systems in the United States, we're having, we're seeing the repercussions of that by taking music out of the schools. It's, yeah. You know, in many schools that no longer have the budget. And that is almost, to me, I mean, how could someone allow this? When music teaches us so much of mathematics, I mean, music is mathematical. So
of
children
course.
That are not able to catch on to mathematics, why are they not integrating? So I saw a program recently about a woman who's bringing music back into the schools, into very poor neighborhoods of New York. And, you know, I think in the next 50 years we're going to see a massive transformation on how children are taught in the schools. At least
yeah.
I hope that we, as a human race, can evolve enough to pay attention to what really our children need, because they're the ones that are going to be running the country. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There are charter schools popping up everywhere in New York City area, and I'm in Bergen County, New Jersey, right over the George Washington Bridge from Manhattan. So everywhere that's popping up all these wonderful, wonderful charter schools that are using all of the stuff that you talk about, all hands-on, tactile, engaging the kids, not just by sitting in the classroom with their hands folded like we grew up with, but they're very engaged, and it's a great, great thing, and I really do hope it does spread. I don't know, have you ever seen the TED Talk called Changing Curricula, I think it's called Curriculum Paradigm, Education Paradigm, by Ken Robbins?
No, I have not. Tell us about
changing,
that.
I think it's called Changing Education Paradigm or something like that, by Ken Robinson. And he talks about how our school system changed with the Industrial Revolution, where, you know, you kind of like boxed the 5-year-old in a box and you put them on a conveyor belt, you know, and then you get the 6-year-olds and they're going, you know, they're going to first grade, this group is going to second grade. Like, so that everybody, just because they had the same age, they were put in the same box and they went up the conveyor belt. And this is what you learn, this is what you do, and you graduate and then you get a job. So it was just very robotic. And he's saying, like, you know what, we took the creative aspect out of our children away from us, because when you're in school, they indoctrinate you with information and they don't allow you to express your needs, or they don't allow you to express, you know, your creative side. And even creative side is your creative thinking. Growing up back then, like, you say, no, you're wrong, it's the way it is, and that's it. So teachers are more open now to having discussion classes, and integrating tools, you know, so reading a book, draw a picture of the story, you know, come up with ideas. So I see a lot more of that. But, yeah, so that's a great TED Talk. Have a peek at it if you get a chance.
Oh, yes, definitely. I'll check that out. So, Susan, what are your future plans and your intentions? Where are you?
Well, my earliest future plan is to be a grandma in a few weeks. So that's going to be exciting. My eldest is expecting. So that's exciting. I am working on my own book. It's taking a little while, but I'm getting there. And I'm constantly doing workshops. I have, you know, I'm going to be putting it out there. I create a new workshop called Understanding Your Chakras Through Art Chi. It helps the layman understand what chakras are, and it also I use the art in order for them to see what it is that's blocking each chakra. So I do a chakra a week, and I'm in the process of creating the whole series. And so, and I give them strategies and tools how to open their chakras. I'm going to be doing another teleconference group for children of Holocaust survivors. If anybody wants me to do a specific target group, I'm happy. I'm very open to it. I'm also speaking with Tammy. I spoke with Tammy about creating another book for children of Holocaust survivors who have lived the life that they did as a child, and they have transformed, and they can inspire others to do the same. And yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm just out there. Just, I'm very creative, so I do things for the moment. I say, okay, this works for me now, and that's what I'm doing. I let the universe also direct me.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's so wonderful. So do you, I know that you have a website. You want to tell the listener your website?
Sure. My website is Art Mends Hearts. That's ArtMendsHearts.com. And you can also follow me on all social media under the same name. And I am, for those who are listening, I'm actually offering you for you to sign up and on my to get sign up for my newsletter, subscribe, and on my newsletter you'll get to hear some of the videos that I've had or talks I've had, and you'll be getting my newsletters that come out once or twice a month. And I'm also selling on my website a copy of our Life Sparks. I'm going to have it signed. You can get it on Amazon, but if you want a signed version, you can get it from me. And along with that, I am offering a 30-minute complimentary Step 1 in Crossing Your Bridge phone call and a Step 1 Crossing Over Your Bridge visual handout. And it will be priority mail. So I'd love to hear from you.
Well, be generous. I'd love it. I might have to sign up for that.
Please
so,
do.
I'm going to your website right now. I'm going there
okay.
right now. So, it kicked me off the show here for just a second, and I came right back in, and you didn't even notice. So that was really cool that I,
okay,
for some
good.
Reason, I was kicked off, and you were talking. I said, you didn't even know that I was gone for a moment.
You know what? There are people that do that to me all the time. I can just talk myself.
Well, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you, Susan, and I am excited to meet you. I hope either we can come to the East Coast or you can come to the West Coast and meet everybody. Next
yeah.
week on Friday, we have a book signing here in Portland, Oregon at Thirst Bistro. It's on the waterfront in Portland. So for those of you that are interested, you can go to my website at petranicole.com or send me a note, and I'll send you the details for the book signing. There will be 6 or 7 authors at the book signing, and I have some exciting news. My book, Petra's Ashes, A Transcendental Journey, is going to be at Amazon tomorrow, and so it will be available over the weekend. And like Susan just shared, if you want a signed copy, an autographed copy, just go to my website. And my name is spelled PetraNicole.com. It's exciting to be doing the show. I'm learning so much from all the people I get to interview. We have on the website, we are going to list a blog. We have a blog on there, and we also have a button you can push that gives you all the up-and-coming shows for the future. So there are some really, really interesting people, fun and exciting information to share with you about all kinds of things that you might be interested in. I have a friend, her name is Laurel. She will be on the show in October, on October 11th, who is a wordsmith. And what that is she does word magic. So she talked about what Susan just shared with you, how words are so powerful, and how if we repeat the same words, they have a certain vibration that can affect you. So if you change the words and your thinking about those words, then your life is also changed. And so she is going to give a talk on the show. And Was there anything else you wanted to add, Susan, other than it was, for me, it was just such a pleasure to interview you and hear your life story. So would you like to add anything else?
No, I appreciate you talking with me and interviewing me. This has been very exciting. This whole book situation is very exciting. But, you know, people, get your newsletter and I'll let you know when we're having book signings or when I have my next workshop or talk. Subscribe. Go on my website and subscribe. And it was such a pleasure. You're such a pleasure to talk to.
Do you do workshops on the West Coast, like arts workshops? Would you be open to combining a workshop with me in the future?
I would love to. Absolutely.
That'd
be great.
I would love to incorporate art as a bridge for people transforming emotions through art. I think it's very, very powerful.
Very great.
And I would, even the East Coast, we can do something. Yes, we can promote each other. That's really
absolutely
fun.
Absolutely. Well, that's what this is all about, ladies and gentlemen. It's like supporting each other. So, yeah, that'd be great.
Exactly. Well, thank you for being on the show today, Susan. I have a few more announcements. Next Friday evening, there will be at the bistro or at the waterfront. It will be at 6:30. People are coming in at 6:30, so you are invited, the listener. Also, if you could all go to my Facebook page, and that is / Transformational Story Coach. Story coaching is very dear to my heart. We tell a story and we can become released from whatever goes on in our lives. It's very powerful. On my website, I give away an MP3 of the meditation of Golden Light, which has to do with going inward and finding the blockages within yourself that may be yet unconscious from early childhood. We often don't know how things have influenced us. Like, we even touched on that subject today with Susan Greif, so that was very powerful. And I give away a 60-minute free complimentary coaching for anyone who signs up on my newsletter. I would love to speak with you. And thanks again for joining Revealing Conversations with Petra. Have a marvelous day. Enjoy the sun, take a walk out in nature, and take good care of yourself. Take care. Bye.
Bye.